And welcome to The Herb Doctor, the podcast where we explore natural ways to support your health and well-being. I'm Katrina, and I'm here with medical herbalist Dr. Dailish Clare. Today we are talking about cramp bark, a lesser-known herb used to ease muscle tension, period pain, and body cramps. Dr. Dailish will explain how it works, who it might help, and what to keep in mind. So let's get into it.
How are you doing, Dailish?
Doing good, Katrina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you getting into today on this podcast?
Well, we've been thinking about what we're going to do, kind of podcast subject-wise, inviting other people. And it occurred to me during the week that one of the things that people might like, and your feedback is always welcome, is a more in-depth dive into some of the herbs that we're surrounded by, but that aren't part of the top 10 and are very useful to everyday common complaints. So the herb I chose to start with is cramp bark.
What's that?
Well, and it's all in the name, Katrina. It's cramp bark. That's actually the name of the plant. That's the common name.
Oh, for cramps?
Cramps, yep. So that'll give you an idea that it works as an antispasmodic. Right. How many people have cramps? Leg cramps, period cramps, endometriosis cramps, irritable bowel cramps, cramps. Yeah, man, a lot of pain is associated with cramps. And sometimes you just wake in the middle of the night with very painful cramps. So, okay. So we've lots of potential interest in this. So it's a cramp bark. It's also known as the Guelder Rose, G-U-E-L-D-E-R, Guelder Rose. Very common into gardens and gardeners, but also not infrequently found in hedgerows in Ireland. So you probably walk past them on a regular basis if you're doing anything in passing gardens or hedgerows. It's from the family Adoxaceae. It used to be called Caprifoliaceae when I went to school, but they're changing the botanical names of all of these things to sometimes to the point where it's very hard. One of the big advantage of the botanical names was that everybody knew what it referred to. But there's so many changes that in itself can be confusing. But that's another point. Okay, so you find cramp bark in damp woods, hedges and thickets throughout and gardens throughout much of Europe and also in North America, Eastern North America. The branch bark is collected in spring and autumn when it's most available for harvesting. Now, I'm very grateful to be doing this podcast because I did not realise that cramp bark is also a food. And especially in Eastern Europe, there is a big following in harvesting them and using them as a juice. It makes a quite bitter, astringent juice, but we've got very babyish in Western industrialized countries, not that Ukraine isn't, but less rural and citified urban. So it's time to reclaim our bitter receptors and benefit from all these things that are around us. It's also made into a pie in the same way that hawthorn berries were used until recent times to make pies. It takes a lot of patience to take the stones out. And it's the same with the Guelder. It has an astringent, bitter, sour taste to the berries, used very similarly to cranberries, but they don't add quite so much sugar. And they make into a pie, Kalinikov pie, which I'm sure I'm not pronouncing right, but this was new to me. So I'll certainly be tasting the berries this year. So the constituents, it's a very poorly researched herb, and most of the research has been done on the seeds because they are used as a food and they're a commercial crop as a food. There's very little emphasis on the herbal medicine aspect, but some knowledge is there. So most of the constituents were based on the berries, but then I found a very nice research article which compared the percentage of the constituents in flowers, bark and fruit. You can also eat the flowers. They're much lighter in terms of milligrams per constituents, but they could certainly brighten up a salad and you can eat them that way. if you want to know kind of officially what they look like, do look up one of the research articles to get a proper picture of the proper botanical and make sure that you identify it with somebody who knows these things or so that you're confident. When they compared the constituent levels in flowers, bark and fruit, there were equivalent amounts of carotenoids, slightly more phenolics, more flavonoids, more proanthocyanidins, and more procyanidin B1. So these are all, if you read the research on the constituents of the berries and you look at the medicinal effects of those constituents, then you're confident that the, or you have a reasonable degree of inferred confidence that the bark will be beneficial for things that primarily antioxidants are useful for. And for those of you who don't know what antioxidants are, is they are things that oppose free radicals. And free radicals are the result of the breakdown products in the body. So you don't want them hanging around. You want to clear the decks. You know how important elimination is for herbalists. So you clear the decks so that the blood can flow, so that the tissues can breathe and heal. All right, if everything is all congested and full of breakdown products, then there's no room for healing. Okay, so that's a wide look at it. So, but there's also vitamin C, especially in the fruit and the tannins and resin and the hydroquinones we've mentioned. So these constituents and the knowledge and information about these constituents add a huge amount of credibility factor to the medicinal effects of herbs. So another species that we use in herbal medicine that's used in a very similar way, but more specifically for uterine cramps, is Viburnum prunifolium. But I have to say, I can't tell any difference clinically, so I now just get the Viburnum opulus, but it is another option. There are no particular cautions. The parts used are the bark. Now, the bark is harvested in the autumn. Some people say the spring. So the spring or autumn before the leaves change colour, or in the spring before the leaf buds open. And then it's dried for later use. I also have put on the links a YouTube about sustainable harvesting of the Viburnum opulus. So there's plenty of information there. In order to dry it, you spread it out in a well-ventilated area, avoid too much humidity. The smaller the pieces, the quicker they dry, and you keep kind of tossing them to kind of turn over and expose a different, the more air that gets to them, the better. Usually dries in 7 to 10 days, and you'll know that it's dry when it's brittle and they snap, right? When you get a piece of it and you bend it, it snaps. So that's when you know it's very dry. Okay, so that's for drying any bark and also beans. That's how you would, or dandelion roots or dock roots or anything. So it's useful to know barks and tough roots can all be dried in that manner. The amount to use is the decoction, which is boiling the dried bark for about 7 to 10 minutes. Over a short period of time, for example, for period pain or for a flare-up over 3 or 4 days of irritable bowel syndrome. That would be an example. It says 15 grams, and I'm like, that's no good to me. What the hell does 15 grams look like? I couldn't really find a way of identifying it, except when I looked up 1 teaspoon of dried willow bark, which I reckon is about the same. That is about 2 to 3.5 grams of 1 teaspoon is 2 to 3.5 grams. So that's roughly about 5 cups, 5 teaspoons or 5 cups, 1 teaspoon per cup over a short period of time. If you have a fluid extract, which is a 1-on-1 tincture blend, a very strong concentration, the dose is up to 100 mils a week, usually 20 to 50 mils, with a single dose of up to 20 mils. I haven't used that high a dose for anybody, but it's good to know that it's possible and well recorded. So we usually use a tincture of 1 in 5, 45% alcohol, and the usual dose of that is 20 to 50 mils per week. Now, that dosage is for the 1 in 5 very close. If you have a 1 in 4 tincture, it wouldn't be too far off, up to 100 mils per week. Now, we usually use 20 mils a week because we combine it with other herbs. But if you're using it as a single, what we would call a simple, that is a range that you can use. But you would, because there's tannins in it, for example, you wouldn't use that continuously. Anything that has a lot of tannins, including your tea, should not be taken. A lot of elderly people get iron deficiency anemia because the constant tea shrinks the mucous membranes and blocks the absorption of iron and vitamin C. So if you put milk in it, you block the tannins, right? So milky tea is a lot less of that effect, just so that people know. But sometimes elderly family members might be taking a lot of tea and a lot of bread and jam, and it's hard to persuade them to take anything else. So just don't have the tea with the food would be one thing, or the tannins medicine with the food. Okay, I didn't mean to put that bit in, but I hope it's useful to people. Mm. I would describe Viburnum Opulus as the most useful spasmolytic of all. And given that most pain is accompanied by spasm, we would use it a lot with willow bark and meadowsweet, which is the Filipendula spirea. It can be used to any situation where there's muscle tension. So another internal condition associated with muscle tension is high blood pressure. So one of my commonest reasons for using this herb is actually high blood pressure. Also where there's spasm, asthma, and asthma with bronchitis or independently, intermittent claudication, which is blockage of arteries usually in the legs, and that can be associated with spasm as well. Spastic constipation. A lot of constipation in our current industrialized urban environments is actually more due to spasm, especially if people are aware of increasing their roughage, their fiber, but it's still not working. Then spastic constipation. My first herb for that would be chamomile, but if it's very resistant, the cramp bark can be used. Irritable bowel and irritable bladder. Nervous tension, and occasionally it can bring dramatic relief to chronic back pain. So if somebody has sciatica, it can be very good for relieving that muscle cramp. The other time I find it useful is if in a small dose on an ongoing capacity, taking breaks from time to time, which is why we rotate the herbs for individualized treatment, would be spasticity due to cerebral palsy and also multiple sclerosis. That's muscle spasm can be a reason for people with multiple sclerosis not being able to sleep. And it's also a side effect of anxiety, kind of living with any chronic condition, including neurological conditions, can be associated with. The reason why it can be helpful with chronic pain is that it relaxes the muscles so that blood can flow to the area, waste products, including lactic acids, can be removed, and normal movements and function can begin to return. And I would often recommend this in combination, take a good dose of cramp bark and then have an Epsom salts bath. So an Epsom salts bath is 2 mugfuls of Epsom salts. Wrap yourself in an old sheet or towel and go to bed. But take the cramp bark, make sure you don't fall, make sure you're safe to have a bath. I'm going to say all these things out loud just to be clear. And the other condition I find it very useful for, along with just severe periods, is endometriosis. Because with endometriosis, the seedlings of uterine material all throughout the peritoneum and spread throughout the body. And that also creates surrounding spasms, depending on where it is. All this fits in with the traditional use for coughs, colds, also TB, rheumatic aches, pains, ulcers, stomach problems, kidneys, and high blood pressure. So that these would be where they would be traditionally used. And even if you look at one of the actions, which is opening up the blood circulation, you can see how it can be useful for any of those. Spasmodic coughs, the aches. So you can see that traditional indications often overlap with what the known effects of these different constituents are when people go to research. There's animal studies which show benefits for the urinary system as an anti-inflammatory and vasorelaxant. So, and in vitro, there's antimicrobial benefits, particularly for gram-positive. I don't usually mention in vitro but it can add to the effect of use for urinary system. And of course, I would use it for renal colic, right, which is the ultimate spasm. So that's when it will be useful for the kidneys. Then I've also made some notes. As I say, I'll be eating the fruit, but I will also try harvesting some. It's a very nice thing to do and a way to connect to nature and to empower ourselves. So cuttings of mature wood, this is how to grow them. So if you find a cramp bark in a hedgerow, I don't think anybody would mind you taking a sprig of it, or even in somebody's garden, you can ask them. So you take cuttings of mature wood and overwinter them in a frame. They should root in early spring, pot them up when large enough to handle, and plant them out in the summer if sufficient new growth is made. Otherwise, keep them in a cold frame for the next winter and then plant them out in the spring. You can layer, I didn't know that, propagation by layering, which is where you bring down a branch, bury it in the soil, where there's a leaf node, put a brick on top of it, otherwise it'll spring back up again, or a rock, and you should get a new plant in the spring. I didn't notice that at the end there. Okay, I would always use pruned branches, but all of that is in a video so that you can bring home the medicine.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at pictures here of cramp bark.
Yeah.
And it's got red berries, mm-hmm. and then it kind of blooms into a lovely white kind of a flower.
Do you recognise them from passing by gardens?
I do now, yeah. Looking at the pictures.
The thing that differentiate them from all the other flowers in the spring is that there's a ring of very open flowers around the edge, and they're not fertile. And then the centre core is a much smaller, insignificant flower. So it's like there's two layers to the flower. Usually you'll see them as shrubs. They can be as high as hawthorn hedges, which are nearly tree size. And once you see them and identify them once, you go, oh, that's what she's talking about. You can go to the garden centre and buy a guelder rose, Viburnum opulus. There are lots of ornamental viburnums. So you want to make sure that it's Viburnum opulus, guelder rose.
See,
and it's that white blooms. Because sometimes when you go on Google, you can get some of the cultivated forms. So in one of the articles that we have attached to the podcast, they will have identified the proper ones because they're researching, I would hope. Yeah, but the ones that I've put on, yes, I'm very happy to recommend the pictures in them.
Yeah, they look good, actually. They look good. And yeah, they look like, you know, you've got Viburnum opulus shrub with red berries, barkwood, and then Viburnum opulus plant. See, I can see that. Yeah, so there's a lot there. Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah. Good. So it's just to open horizons that it's not just the ones that are in the herb teas that you can buy in the supermarket, that there's a lot of very accessible herbs, very safe. No particular, I never advise people in general about using herbs with drugs. So you need to check that out if you're on medication for any of these problems. There's none that are glaringly obvious. There's no reports of case histories in the research land. But that's mainly because no research has been done. But case histories of interactions would be an indicator of watch this space. They're not science, they're stories, but there are none, even at that level of information. So that's reassuring.
And just one question there. So just from a listener point of view, just is it used in other teas or brands, or is there like parts of it used in other things as well?
I haven't seen them generally available. They're available from our apothecary and other herbal suppliers, and we can now actually post to the UK and we can post to Europe. So if anybody wants them and can't find them locally, I always prefer people to have local resources, but we can be a resource for them.
Fantastic.
It's important to empower ourselves and to find our own solutions. Adverse effects, not seen them in 25 years of using them by the litre.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to her. I mean, I always learn. I'm learning from you on this as well. That, you know, that's something new I've learned today about something that's growing outside in the garden that can be very, very beneficial to all of us,
yeah.
You know, which is so good. So thank you for this, really insightful. And if you have any questions or any feedback you'd like to give us, we really would love to hear back from you. If there's anything that you'd like us to go into detail in future or dealers to talk about, let us know. You can comment on all the podcast platforms that we are on. And just want to say thank you so much to Dr. Dailish Clare.
Follow, subscribe and comment. All the usual.
Bye.